Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome in to Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. It was a week off. Hopefully, we won finals week, and Phil, we can actually talk about basketball again.
Yeah, we can talk basketball. We can do deep takes on which Mandalorian Baby Yoda meme is the best. I mean, we got time.
Yeah, because there was nothing to talk about from this past week, we fielded some questions on Twitter. We got some really good ones from you guys, and we're going to go through those in just a minute. That's probably going to be most of the podcast today. But I thought we might at least touch on the two games we have coming up this week. Two bye games, Grambling on Tuesday, which I guess many of you might actually listen to this game after the Grambling game actually happens, because we'll probably be posting this podcast on Tuesday at some point. And then they will have North Dakota State on Friday. We're not going to dive too deep into these games. I mean, safe to say, Phil, that these are two games we fully expect Marquette to win. But I guess, what are you kind of looking for in the two bye games this week?
I'm looking for no injuries, one. I'm looking for, and I'd say, so no injuries is the number one priority. Number two,
I'd say two wins is the number one priority.
Yeah, okay. All right. Fair. I guess I'm assuming that to be a given.
Yes. Like, yes.
Let's be honest. The Grambling State, I fully predict at least the first 10 minutes are going to be rough Tuesday night. Like coming off of 10 days off, having won the Kansas State game, having had finals, maybe they'll prove me wrong, but
maybe a little rust. Speaking of which, that's the name of the last team Grambling played. I'm not making that up. It's Rust College.
Well, all right then. Do they have a lot of WD-40 on hand?
Maybe so, but yeah, Grambling, they have played like four teams that I've really never heard of. A lot of non-Division One teams. They've only have two Division One wins this season, Southeastern Louisiana and Louisiana Monroe. So not leaving their home state of Louisiana for those two games. But yeah, their wins over like East Texas Baptist, Ecclesia, is I guess how you say this one, Paul Quinn, which apparently is also the name of a college. Like, yeah, seriously, the last team they played is
anything,
Rust College.
Huh? They can just name a college anything, huh?
I suppose so, but yeah, Grambling is around 291 in KenPom, so this is obviously a team Marquette is projected to beat pretty handily. A lot of red numbers. If you follow this podcast enough, you know what I mean by red numbers on KenPom means they're just not good offensively or defensively. There's nothing that they're even rated in the top 100 in the nation on. I guess they do get a decent amount of turnovers for a team of that caliber, so maybe the way Marquette turns the ball over, maybe they do get a few turnovers in this game to make it interesting for a while. But yeah, I mean, statistically, there's not much to believe that Grambling would have too much of a shot in this game.
Yeah, I'm not, like I said, I forgot so much about the win. You know, I was focused on other things. I forgot about the winning. But yeah, I think both games, it's really to work on fundamentals, get back into the swing of things. You know, two games in 3 days, even against, we'll say, less than stellar competition, is nothing to shake a stick at, right? Like that kind of gets you back and fired up, and then they get a week off around Christmas time and then come back for Central Arkansas. But yeah, most of all the two wins, but I really want to see no injuries, and I really want to see Kobe McEwen get back on track.
Yeah, he had been a little bit of a funk heading into finals. Hopefully he snaps out of that. You know, as I was looking at some of the KenPom numbers for Grambling in North Dakota State, the one thing that really jumped out at me, talk about contrasting styles. The three-point rate, in other words, the number of three-pointers a team takes relative to all shots taken, Grambling is 349th. In other words, they hardly ever take three-pointers. 24.7% of their shot attempts are threes. North Dakota State loves to chuck it. 51.9% of their shots are three-pointers. That is number one in the country as far as how frequently they attempt threes. So in other words, on Tuesday, look for Grambling to try to get to the basket and get in the paint. On Friday, look for North Dakota State to just bombs away. Threes all day. Like pretty much more than more than every other time down the floor, they're going to attempt a three, which is just a wild number. That, by comparison, Marquette shoots threes. Oh, I had it here a second ago. It was like 40-something percent of the time. And you think Marquette may take a lot of threes.
Right.
Yeah, Marquette's three-point frequency is 40.4%. So 40% of Marquette's field goal attempts are threes. North Dakota State is 51.9. So they love to chuck it. And their percentage is not that great. It's 31.9% as a team. So, yeah, look for bombs away from the Bison on Friday.
Boy, man, if it's a cold shooting night on Friday, that is going to be an atrocious game to watch.
And if they are hot, it could be very scary.
Yes, correct. Correct. Well, and that's the thing is they may be chucking, but what's their hit rate? Their
percentage is 31.9 as a team, so not great.
Yeah. So they love the shot, but they can't hit it.
They are volume shooters for sure. throw up enough, you get a few of them to go in. So that is kind of their strategy. Another kind of scary stat for North Dakota State, though. Now, they are not the type of bye team that ranks near Grambling. Like Grambling, as I mentioned, they're 291 on KenPom. North Dakota State is 158. So a team Marquette should beat, but by no means a joke of an opponent. Like, this is a bye game that if Marquette plays poorly, that losing would be in the equation, where Marquette could play poorly against Grambling and still win. But if Marquette plays poorly against North Dakota State, we may be sweating a little bit. But another thing that really jumps out, they are number one in the nation in offensive rebounding percentage on defense. So they really keep their opponents off the offensive glass.
Well, it's a good thing that Marquette's not very good at offensive rebounding, so they don't give up many second chance points.
Right. So that's something to keep an eye on, is Marquette needs to hit the offensive glass a little harder against North Dakota State, because they're pretty good about keeping their opponents off the glass.
Yeah, well, I just made the joke that Marquette's not very good at offensive rebounding, so that'll work out just fine. The one thing that jumps out to me about North Dakota State is, and it'll be interesting because I think it'll represent how this team will defend in the Big East, where you're going to see more matchups like this. The second best three-point shooter at a 40% clip for North Dakota State, Rocky Kreiser, I think I'm saying that right, is 6'10". So who do you put on the 6'10 guy that's gonna go out there and bomb away, right? That's like, are you gonna send? Yeah,
he's
Theo
probably
gonna
try to draw Theo away from the basket, right. I would guess.
So do you switch on that and put? I mean, there's not a lot of other height there, but really the question is, who does Theo guard?
I mean Theo's got to guard the big guy, and I mean if that means Theo's not gonna hit the offensive glass. Maybe that's a reason teams don't hit the offensive glass very well,
right,
against North Dakota State. Their opponents' big men are probably out on the perimeter.
Well, plus if you're bombing away with that many threes, you get a bunch of long rebounds and weird rebounds.
By the way, I got that backwards. Never mind. I got that totally backwards, because obviously if he's on offense, then your team would be a defensive rebounding.
Right.
Rewind that and scratch it, edit it out.
We'll fix it in post. But yeah, the point remains, though, you're right. The offensive rebounds, North Dakota State probably has defensive rebounds because guys aren't shooting a lot of they're shooting a lot of twos and they've got some height. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Theo and Ed and Jace guard the perimeter if they've got someone that's, bombing 40% at 6'10".
I'm going to try to redeem myself on that rebounding comment. They're actually very poor on the offensive glass, North Dakota State. They rank 282 in the country, and that is probably because their big man is shooting threes.
There you go. All right.
So there we go. Okay, so I've tried to make up for that. Sorry. I'm going to enjoy my Christmas beer a little more as I try to break this down and salvage this podcast. But yeah, so I got the matchup in the middle against North Dakota State will be interesting. How much they try to drag Marquette's bigs out to the perimeter. If Marquette steps up on the defensive glass because of that, and how they basically Marquette's going to match up defensively around all these guys, because yeah, by far and away, they're one of their best shooters is a big man, and but yeah, they have a few other guys who can hit. Cameron Hunter is shooting at 44% from three on the season. He's one of their guards, though. So yeah, North Dakota State is capable of beating Marquette, but they shouldn't. Marquette is still a superior team because North Dakota State's defensive numbers are not very good at all.
Right.
This is a team where Marquette's offense should be able to get going a little bit.
Yeah, both Grambling State and North Dakota State have on the defensive end have turnstiles for mascots. So hopefully Marquette's offense can continue to evolve. And quite frankly, these would be good opportunities to practice those two-point shots that they haven't been good to date hitting.
Yeah, that's something we are going to get to in the questions segment of the pod. We're going to get to that coming up in just a minute. Before we move on to the questions, Phil, one thing I do want to touch on before we move on is the first net rankings of the season are out. They delayed the debut this year, which is wise because the first net rankings of last season were widely ridiculed because they just weren't ready. I think the first net rankings this year made a little more sense to people. Marquette debuted at 53. What jumped out to you, because I know you have the team sheet with you, Phil, and I've got it up here myself. What jumps out to you about Marquette's early net numbers?
Well, I think I'm going to get into a little bit of the breaking down the algorithm a little bit, but to be fair, it is early, obviously. But I think the thing that jumps out to me is that Marquette has a lot of upside potential right now. And obviously things can evolve, right? If teams go on a horrible losing streak, they'll drop out of a queue, you know, because right now, as an example, both of the Villanova games are Q1 games. But if Villanova has a horrible string there, they might fall down to a Q2 win. A quadrant two. But I think what stands out to me is from a Big East perspective, there are only two games right now that show up as anything worse than a Q2 game, which is Providence, surprisingly, not surprisingly given how they're performing, but Providence, both home and away, shows up as a Q3. But there are no Q4 games in the Big East right now. So,
nor should there ever be.
Right. The conference should be constructed to avoid that altogether. But be that as it may, what it says is there's a lot of upside potential from a solid to great Big East performance versus a relatively low downside potential, right? We got to win the next three bye games. Those are all Q4 games. But other than that, and other than Providence, you know, Marquette's got to obviously go out and win some games, but there's definitely some games out there that can help the net rankings once you get into the
yeah, a lot season. Of great Q1 opportunities, yes. Including two at home right now, Butler and Villanova, and then pretty much every road game in the Big East except Providence, correct?
Correct. Yep. Providence is the only Big East game that shows up in Q3.
Yeah, that's quite a drop for Providence. Really disappointing for them. But one thing that jumped out to me is, you know, maybe where I say, well, 53 seems a little low. Maybe it does, but it's not a big deal. But, you know, the fact that Marquette has played two Q1 games so far and really got hammered at both of them. I think the margin of victory caps at 10.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter whether it's 11 or 40. But the fact is they lost by a significant margin in their two Q1 games, which, of course, was Maryland on a neutral floor and at Wisconsin. So I think that's hurting them right now as they have no Q1 wins. But they've done well everywhere. They've won everything else. That includes three Q2 games, which is Purdue, USC, and Kansas State. And they also have a Q3 win against Davidson, which, who knows, maybe that could even get a little better if Davidson does well in its conference play, which I think Davidson should. So that just kind of jumped out to me is the getting hammered in the two Q1 games, maybe knocking them down a little bit.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting, and I swear I'm not picking on them because they're Wisconsin. I'm picking on them because I'm confused. But Wisconsin shows up as 51, so two spots ahead of us. Obviously, Wisconsin beat Marquette and beat them soundly. But the thing that's confusing is Marquette's 7-2, Wisconsin's 5-5. Wisconsin has all three losses in Q1, no Q1 wins. They're 2-2 in Q2, and their average net win is 159, and their average net loss is 51, whereas Marquette's average net win is 147, and average net loss is 31. Translating all that numbers, our average win is against tougher opponents than Wisconsin. Our average loss is against tougher opponents than Wisconsin. Our record is better, and we have more Q2 wins than Wisconsin, but somehow that all works out to Wisconsin being 2 points ahead. So there's something in the algorithm that, and maybe it's they really value those blowout losses or blowout wins and devalue blowout losses, but I don't know. We've got some refining here because just, you know, at a glance, it seems a little bit loopy.
And I will say, like, as I remember last year, I guess I didn't pay too much attention to the net rankings, but as I recall, it was widely ridiculed at the beginning, but as we got into March, it really made sense.
Right.
So as these numbers have a little more time to bake, I think it'll all kind of even out, and maybe some of the early season inequities of the schedules are maybe kind of throwing it off a little bit, and we'll just kind of see where it is. Maybe it'll all make a little more sense when we get to February and March.
Yeah, because even going one spot up, NC State 8-2, their net win, average net win is significantly worse than ours, and as is their net loss. And they have their 3-0 in Q2, 0-1 in Q1, and 1-1 in Q3. So they've got a Q3 loss that we don't have. Again, so why does that work out to 3? But to your point, I think it'll start to resolve itself. I think we saw enough runtime with it last year that I'm not worried about it, especially if Marquette wins. I just think in early returns, it seems to be, you know, considerably worse than some of the standard metrics like analytics like KenPom and Tvorak and some of the others, because I just with an eye test and looking at it, you're not entirely sure how the analytic came out with the result it did.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point, almost to the point of the season that, for KenPom, where last year's numbers have kind of faded out of the equation, and the rankings are more driven towards what's happening this season and this season alone. And right now, adjusted offensive efficiency for Marquette, 37th in the nation, defensive efficiency, 32nd in the nation. So both top 40. I'll take both of those numbers right now if they can kind of stay right there. Maybe you'd like to see a little bit more on both sides, but certainly wouldn't call either of those numbers bad right now. And Marquette right now is ranked 26th overall in KenPom, which is certainly a good number.
Yeah, and we'll see. We've got – and it'll be curious how those numbers adjust. I think we've got a question coming up here that'll maybe address some of that, whether those numbers get better or not. Obviously, for rivalry purposes, we want that Wisconsin loss back. But other than that, like I'm pretty, I'll say, content with where we are. Like I'm not worried or concerned. There's nothing glaring that we didn't already bake into the pie, right? Like I think we'll be.
I don't love it, but I'm not panicking either. I'm just kind of fine with it right now.
Yeah, everything. It's not the burning dog in the burning room fine. It's like legitimately fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's just fine.
As long as we don't lose to Grambling State or North Dakota State.
Yes, let's please not lose any of these next three bye games, but we'll deal with that as it comes along. So hopefully three wins coming up between now and New Year's Day. We'll have a podcast between now and Christmas, maybe breaking down what we see in Grambling, North Dakota State, but we'll get to that next week. For now, we kind of fielded some questions where we were looking for some ideas to what to talk about in the podcast. We got a lot of really good ones. We weren't going to want to go through all of them, but we narrowed it down to 6 questions that we thought were interesting, might make for either interesting or fun discussion. So I'm going to let Phil drive the conversation and throw out the questions, and we'll just dive right into it and should lead to some fun discussion. So Phil, fire away.
Yeah, so why don't you kick back and put your feet up and drink some more of that Christmas ale, and I'll bring it.
It's fantastic. It's called You'll Shoot Your Eye Out. It's fantastic.
Gotta love that that reference. And maybe if we have a podcast.
Yeah, Y-U-L-E, You'll Shoot Your Eye Out. It's great.
Maybe if we have a podcast between before Christmas, we can discuss which is our favorite Christmas movie. But I digress.
Yeah, maybe off-season topic is, you know, Marquette / craft beer.
Ooh,
discussion.
I like that idea. We can also have a debate about whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. For the record, it totally
it is.
So it's not much of a debate. So anyway,
okay.
So first of all, a big thank you to the Scrambled Eggs audience that is also Twitter based, because like you said, we got a lot of really good questions and a lot of good content where, you know, we use the Twitter as a content farm since we're too lazy to do this stuff for ourselves. So the first,
I'm also scared of message boards.
Oh God. It is you'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy anywhere.
I put that one on a tee for you.
Yeah, there you go. So the first question comes from Patrick Leary, and for the record, I'm not quoting these questions directly, kind of paraphrasing them, this just to make it a little clearer and succinct. Plus, Twitter is a disgusting place. So the premise of this question is, you know, Wojo gets snapped out of it. The snapping happens. Thanos goes and snaps his fingers. Wojo disappears. He's not there. He's not fired. He doesn't leave for another job. Just disappears at the end of the season. And we've got to bring in a new coach for Marquette. So take out all the reasons he left, whatever. Who's next? Who you got next for Marquette's coach?
Yeah, and yeah. Again, this is from Patrick Leary from the Anonymous Eagle podcast. Yep. It's a good question. And yeah, to be clear, Patrick wanted to emphasize. I want to make sure this is fair to Patrick that this he does not want to make this suggest that a coaching change needs to happen or should happen. This is not a reflection on Wojo. It's just a pure hypothetical. Marquette needs a coach. What is realistic? So that is what we're kind of digesting here is. Pure hypothetical, not related to anything with happening with Wojo. What is the ceiling? Who could Marquette get as a coach if hypothetically it needed one? Now, I suppose kind of the layup answer would probably be Brian Wardle. Because the thing is, Phil, in my experience, like really, just looking back on the history of Marquette hires, whether it's recent history or going back into the 80s. Marquette really does not make huge splash hires. At least, the first one. Now, they'll pay a coach plenty, especially if he wins after he's proven it after a couple years. But, like, they really don't go out and just hire the hottest name at a mid-major and make him a coach. Like, Wojo, this is his first head coaching job. Buzz Williams had 1 year of head coaching experience, and he was assistant under Crean. Crean, that was his first head coaching job. He was an assistant under Izzo. I think the last guy they hired from another school was Mike Dean. I think he came from Siena. And then you go back to, like, Raymond's and Majerus. They were Al McGuire assistants, right? So,
right.
But I will say this. I am not a big advocate of the whole in-the-family thing. I know a lot of fans gravitate to that, but not just Marquette fans, but like any college fans. It's like, okay, we got to keep it in the family. We need like a former player or a former coach, former assistant. I push back against that. I think you got to hire the best coach. You shouldn't like the first qualification shouldn't be, well, has this guy been here before? Like, does this guy know this area? Did he go to the school here? I think you're really limiting yourself in that regard. But I think Brian Wardle would probably be near the top of the list. He's at Bradley now. He got him into the tournament. If that program continues to rise, I think he would probably be a guy that would be high on the list.
Yeah, I think Brian Wardle's name, especially by fans, would get mentioned. I tend to agree with you. I'm not for an all-in-the-family hire unless, like, you're talking about a long-term coach, right? Like, let's imagine Coach K or Tom Izzo retire. I think from a transitional standpoint, those type of places where you've got a long tenured coach, I think the tendency is to someone that knows the culture and the system and all that stuff for continuity purposes. Look at Greg Gard at Wisconsin replacing the Grinch. But I don't like the Brian Wardle hire because, one, like, what? He was here in, like, he graduated, what, 2001? And,
yes.
And 2001 Marquette is, let's be honest, considerably different than 2019 Marquette. Like, there is no continuity of culture necessarily there. He's doing fine at Bradley, but nothing that blows the socks off. I think the answer is pretty much in real life and in this made-up scenario, I think the answer is going to be Stan Johnson. He's there. That is true continuity. He's always talked about it as being another head coach or another assistant waiting to be a head coach. And again, people may not like it. Maybe people may say, oh, Wojo hasn't produced or hasn't done anything. But I'll tell you who really loves Wojo and thinks he's doing a bang-up job. the people that hire coaches at Marquette. The board of trustees is 100% in Wojo's corner. If he's snapped away, Stan Johnson is getting the very first call. Because again, continuity, he's waiting for that head coaching hire. He's a quality guy as far as we can tell, you know, now every coach presents themselves as a quality guy, but you know, Stan.
Yeah. But no, I've heard nothing but glowing things about Stan Johnson. And yeah, I agree with you. Like, again, Patrick didn't want us to go down this route of like, if Wojo left for another job, then, but again, if that did happen, like if Wojo did well here and left for another job, I think Stan Johnson would be named the new head coach within a week.
Yes.
Within a week.
Absolutely.
Like it would happen so quickly. But again, if Wojo were to be dismissed, then I think you'd probably clean house and it would be a totally new staff. But again, that wasn't the example Patrick was going for. He was kind of saying like, independent of the current staff, kind of where would you go? And like, what kind of external options, like what could Marquette bring in? Like he added the qualifier. He would have to be a guy who would realistically leave his current job for Marquette. So for me, that disqualifies the dream hires of, you know, there's a long list of colleges keeping an eye on what happens with Billy Donovan and John Beilein in the NBA. If either one of them were to be fired in the NBA, a long list of colleges would want them as coaches, but they would not leave those jobs for Marquette, so I couldn't go with Donovan or Beilein. But another name I would throw at you is T.J. Otzelberger.
Yeah.
He's a first-year head coach at UNLV. He was a longtime assistant at Iowa State. He won 28 and 24 games in his last 2 years at South Dakota State. He's off to a bit of a rough start at UNLV, but that's his first year, so you really can't judge him by his record. You know, 30 years ago, the idea of a coach leaving UNLV for Marquette would probably be blasphemy. When, you know, the running Rebs were like the cream of the crop in college basketball.
Right. They were the original bag droppers.
Yeah. Well, that and they won.
Yes.
They won a lot of games.
That's true.
I mean, they were an awesome team. I mean, they almost went undefeated 1 year before Duke upset them in the Final Four. They won a national championship the year before that. But again, that was then, this is now. When's the last time you turned on a game and said, hey, UNLV's playing tonight? I want to see what they're doing.
I have no idea.
They're just not as relevant nationally as Marquette. So I think now, grabbing a coach from UNLV and bring him to Marquette would be conceivable. So I would put Otzelberger at the top of the list of candidates if Marquette hypothetically needed a coach. And just the last name I'd throw out there is Luke Yaklich. Now, he was widely praised under Beilein for being his kind of defensive specialist. He's now the associate head coach at Texas. So he has now worked at two major, major programs as an assistant, Michigan and Texas. I think he is a guy who will be a head coach very soon. So I would say that's the kind of assistant. Again, I know people who may be looking for an answer to this question want me to say some splash hire that they would get whoever the top mid-major coach in America is. Somebody's waiting for me to say Greg Marshall or something. But that's not the type of hire Marquette makes. It just isn't. They go for assistants that they believe in and believe have a high ceiling, and then they'll give him the big money on the next contract or after he makes a tournament or makes a Sweet 16. But I think that's probably what you would be looking at whenever Marquette does need a head coach again in the future.
Yeah, the other name I would throw there, and I swear to God this is not convenient since Rise of Skywalker comes out on Thursday, but I would actually throw another Luke out there, Luke Murray. For multiple reasons. One, it would be awesome to have Bill Murray at Marquette games. I would dig that, and I would have no end of Caddyshack and Ghostbuster references to quote at him, which he'd then punch me in the face. But hey, you know, whatever. Bill Murray punched me in the face. I'm cool with it.
Be a heck of a story to tell.
Yeah, it would. But he's also been, you know, I believe he's the lead assistant at Louisville with Chris Mack. He was so at Xavier as well, and that Xavier familiarity, right? Like Jesuit school, Big East school. There's a lot of like there about the connections, Midwestern connections.
Absolutely. He's a highly respected assistant coach, like his dad aside.
Right.
He's been with it, and if he runs a program, anything like Chris Mack runs a program, I'd be all for that. So he's another guy like Luke Yaklich who I think will be a head coach. And Stan Johnson. Yaklich and Stan Johnson will all be head coaches very soon. Now, where? Time will tell. But I think those are three highly, highly respected assistant coaches who definitely get after it on the recruiting trail and any college looking for a new head coach, a first-time head coach, would be wise to call any of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think we've answered that, have we?
I think that's good enough, yeah.
Okay, so let's go to the next one. So Sam Newberry, an occasional reference, one of the Anonymous Eagles folks, came up with a...
Really crossing the streams in this week's podcast. Yeah, two Anonymous Eagle guys chiming in.
Yeah, they don't have enough to talk about on their podcast, so they're going to yell at us for us.
But no, they have good questions.
It is good questions. Now, Sam, if Sam had only answered my 50 mini Theos versus one Theo, which one do you want to fight, then we'd have something. But Twitter joke. So Sam's question is essentially, he had a series of really good questions, so we had to pick one. And that one question is, what are, you know, and Joe, this is for you first, what's the realistic ambitions for Marquette's postseason now that we've seen roughly 30% of the schedule?
Honestly, my realistic expectations for the postseason has not changed from what I would have said in September. We'd have to check the tape and see exactly what I said, but...
I believe you said 10-8. 10-8.
But we said postseason, right?
Yep, postseason, yeah.
Your question is like, so postseason, so how far could they go in the tournament? Yeah, I think they could win a game, maybe two.
Yeah.
I think that's about it.
What about the Big East tournament? I do not see
this as a Elite Eight or Final Four team. I think that's a little higher than the ceiling for this team. But they're good enough to beat a decent tournament team. Look at the way they played against USC. And Davidson, I mean, those are the type of teams I think you would see in the tournament in the first round if Marquette gets the type of seed that I think it is capable of getting, you know, like maybe a 6-7-ish seed. I think you would play a team like that, and I think you can get that win. And then maybe you get lucky and get a win in the next round if, you know, you play extremely well and the higher-seeded team does not. I think Marquette is capable of something like that. But beating a team like Maryland to go really deep in the tournament, I said it the other week, and I'll say it again. I think this team has a ceiling, and beating a team like Maryland is above that ceiling. So I don't see this as a team that can go very deep in the tournament, but I think it is good enough to win a game or two.
So I did think that this was a Sweet 16 team before the season, and Marquette's performance has been a little rockier than I anticipated. So, you know, one might say, okay, well, then you're going to modify your postseason expectation. But I'm actually not, because I think Marquette's been a little rockier, but I also think college basketball generally has been rockier. I mean, look at this.
Boy, no kidding. We are on our fifth new number one team. And I believe it was on the Ion College Basketball podcast. Matt Norlander said this. I think the record for new number one teams in one season is 7. And by new, I mean like a different program. So like if Duke is 1 and then Kentucky takes over and then Duke gets it back, that's not 3, that's 2.
Right.
So 7 different teams, that's the most. We're at 5 now.
Yeah.
Like Michigan State, Duke, now Kansas, Louisville, and who's the other number one? Kentucky. Yeah, Michigan State, Kentucky, Duke, now Kansas, and Louisville have all been number one. Ohio State and Gonzaga could both potentially be number one at some point this year as well. So we could be heading for a record year, but there have been some crazy upsets in college basketball this year. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State, if they hadn't lost Sunday afternoon, very well might have been the number one team today, right? Like
they absolutely would be. They should be.
So, you know, the college basketball landscape is just kind of upheaval. So I bring that up to say I think Marquette's capable certainly of winning the first two games. And then it really from there it breaks down from a bracket standpoint, like what the matchups are. Because I think, you know, there are matchups that would be absolutely in Marquette's favor to get them to a Sweet 16 or an Elite 8. But there's also nightmarish matchups depending on where they fall. I feel pretty confident from a Big East postseason standpoint that I think they will at a minimum make the semifinals, and I think I'd actually predict the finals in the Big East. I just, again, based on the Big East overall, I think, and we're going to do a pod, when the next pod we do, we're going to do more of a detailed breakdown of the Big East. But I just think the bottom's better, yes, but there's not a true dominant team. So I think Marquette has just...
Yeah, I think it's really going to be mucked up in the middle. It could be another season like what we had a few years ago where there were, what, 4 teams tied for third at 10-8?
Yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
I could see another season like that.
Yeah, correct. I think that was that Buzz's last year, I want to say?
No, I want to say that was the year Marquette made the tournament and lost to South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
So I think that was Wojo's.
Yeah, Wojo's second year.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, correct. So, yeah, I think from a Big East perspective, I think we should expect good things in the postseason tournament. And then as far as the NCAA tournament, again, I think this team is, in my mind so far, we'll see how it shapes out through the rest of the season. But I feel confident in saying they can win two, and then the rest is just going to be a crapshoot in terms of matchups.
Yeah, I was just looking at it. That was 2017. That was the year that Marquette, so that was three seasons ago now, that Marquette made the tournament, lost to South Carolina. It was Villanova at the top, Butler at 15-3, Butler at 12-6, and then Creighton, Marquette, Seton Hall, and Providence all 10-8, Xavier 9-9, St. John's 7-11. So, like, really kind of mucked up in the middle between 3-7.
Right.
And I could see something like that this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see where that goes. All right, let's move on. So this is an interesting question. This is from the Twitter handle is @KurtInMilwaukee. And his question was essentially, and again, I'm paraphrasing, you can inject Wojo with true serum and you get 3 minutes with him. What question or questions are you asking him?
Okay, so he has to answer it no matter what is asked. So my question would probably take about 5 seconds, and if I can get 3 minutes worth of an answer, you know, he's probably going to explain a lot. May even have time for a quick follow-up. But my question is simple, and I think it's the question most Marquette fans would ask. What happened with the Housers? Tell me everything about how it deteriorated up until the point they were totally gone.
Yeah, I think that's probably the number one question.
Yeah, and like, just everything from at the point it was good till the time you heard they were leaving, what Hail Marys did you make to try to convince them to stay? Whose fault was it? Did they say anything about why this isn't working? I would want to know everything about how that whole thing deteriorated. And I think you can get a lot in 3 minutes.
I might also broaden that question a little bit. Obviously, we want to know the Housers. But, I mean, we could also just say, tell us about what you've learned about recruiting and coaching brothers. Good idea or bad idea? Right? Like, I think there's something there. I don't know. Just to be a little different, the question I might ask him is just like, is this team where you want it to be? Like, I just – and I'd really have to think about it. I might have a few rapid-fire questions because I will say this. I at no time feel like – whenever he gives post-game pressers or interviews or anything, I never feel – I don't think he's lying to us, but I never feel like he's talking about his true feelings and impressions. He's kind of – he's spinning the wheel of glib coach response and that – whatever it lands on.
You know, the coach speak. Yes. You know, you got to – you don't want to say anything that's going to be a hot take or come back to bite you or have a sound bite that you're going to have to be asked about again in 3 days. You just try to be boring and move on to the next one.
Right. I mean, I have no scientific data to back this up, but I feel like he is the most bland coach in America that when it's not a game. Obviously, he gets fired up in games and whatnot. But I don't feel like from a interview content standpoint he's all that interesting.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
So
yeah, just maybe basically like what would he be like if he had a few beers and you were just asking him questions at the bar?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, I don't even need truth serum. I just want to know, is he a good hang?
Yeah, he's a cool guy. Yeah, I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he is.
But you know, it's different when all those cameras are on and everybody's recording.
Right. Right. Exactly. Okay, moving on to the next one, and this is an interesting question, and it's basketball adjacent, but we're going to get sartorial here for a minute. So at Sanders MU wants to know, of the current uniforms we've seen, which is your least favorite?
All right, so was that the question? I thought the question was, of the four uniforms, if you had to get rid of one, which one would it be?
Yeah, okay. But that was the exact question.
I'll answer them both. So the least favorite one I've seen this year was the gray one.
Okay.
I thought that one was kind of ugly. I could do away with that one. But if I had to get – of the four main ones, so white, gold, dark blue, and championship blue, as it is called, it's almost by process of elimination, I think it has to be the whites.
Yes.
Just because The powder blue is great. Championship blue, that's the best one of the current four. The gold also looks awesome. So that then it comes down to just the dark blue or the whites. So I'll take the dark blues on the road and then just get rid of the whites so you can wear either gold or powder blue at home. So that's, again, process of elimination. I would say get rid of the whites. But the ugliest uniform I think we've seen this year is the gray.
Yeah, I agree. I agree on the gray. I know I got some heat for it on Twitter, but I like the indigenous people or Native American honoring uniform, yeah. The kind of the baby blue with some different trim and different text.
Yeah, you did. And I will say this about that uniform. Yeah, obviously, certainly great cause, but just aesthetically and how it looks, if you like hold that picture next to the powder blues, that indigenous, it's not really powder blue. It's more of a slant towards turquoise.
Yeah, that's true.
And for that reason, I just didn't like it at all.
And that's fair.
If I'm honestly ranking all the worst ones I've seen this year, I think I would actually put that one below the gray because it just kind of looks like one of the ones you get at like at Walmart that like costs $20 if you don't want to fork up the $80 to buy the legit authentic replica jersey. And yet again, it's not even really powder blue; it's more turquoise. But again, I know it's for a cause, and so that's why it looks that way. But I don't need to see that one again. But
that's fair. I will defend it to the death. I loved that uniform. The grays, like, I thought those were awful. The other alternative I actually really liked was the black that they wore against Wisconsin.
See, honestly, like, yeah, the black I didn't mind. It almost just kind of looked like the dark blues that they just got maybe, like, soaking wet. like at first glance, that's what it looked like. It looked like they're wearing the dark blues. They've just been sweating in a 90-degree gym. And that's what they look like to me. And it looked fine.
Yeah.
I liked some of the powder blue, the championship blue accents on the side. I thought it looked okay.
Yeah.
I just hated the result in the black.
Right. No, I agree. And of the core four, we're in agreement there. The whites are the A, least memorable, and B, less, the least like directly Marquette. I know Marquette played in some white uniforms that were pretty kind of memorable and epic, back in the day, but I've always associated kind of obviously the gold, the championship blue, and then, you know, dark blue being a version. Those would be my three primary. I would still make the argument that there's a couple of the George Thompson circle in the middle of the
yeah, the bullseye kind of jersey.
Yeah, I would make the argument that jersey should, and it shouldn't be an alternate, right? Like if you're gonna have the white jersey, you should honor that jersey. If you're gonna have a primary white jersey, as
my annual campaign that I bring up every year for Owls Night, just to like spice it up and get people more excited about it, it should be a throwback night, and Marquette should bring back one of the classic 70s jerseys for that night, and the team should wear that.
Yes.
On Owls Night. And so like every year, that's when we see the classic throwbacks. They wear those on Owls Night. That's my free idea for Marquette's jerseys going forward, is spice up Owls Night by wearing an Owls era jersey on that night.
Well, and it's not like it's a risk. I mean, like literally everybody's doing throwback and 70s era stuff, right? Like it's a great idea. So, I mean, hopefully someone in some position of authority somewhere can get this podcast to someone that can do something about it.
Jordan Brand, where are you, man?
Yeah, we just got free ideas coming out everywhere.
Sponsor the pod. Anyway, moving on.
Yes.
What's the next one?
Okay, moving on. Oh, and I apologize. I misread my notes. So Nick Bear was the one that stated the least favorite uniform of the four. So that was Nick Bear.
Okay. Got
to give proper credit. At Sanders MU is his question was, and I'm going to actually pivot off his question, but essentially his questions was, looking at the roster now, what who is a current transfer risk, if you will? And he identified a couple. And I want to pivot off that.
I'm kind of with you. I do want to kind of pivot off that. I don't like speculating about current players who could or should transfer because granted, I hope the players don't listen to this podcast. And even if they do, I would hope they don't care at all what we think.
Right.
But I would just hate to be like a person who started a rumor mill or a feeling in the fan base that a certain guy doesn't fit or a certain guy should leave. Because, I just don't like starting that, you know. so that I'm just kind of deflect away from the question is, and I'll just say, isn't every player a transfer risk? Based on what we've been seeing throughout college basketball, couldn't any player transfer at any time? But, I just don't like saying current players who are probably working hard to try to do the best they can for this team and see themselves as a big part of the future, to say something about that kid on a podcast that, you know what, I'm not sure he fits and I think he should leave. Yeah, I just don't like saying that.
I agree, and I also – though I would pivot it this way. Right, like in within the fan base, right, you could make an argument that if you were, again, if you were doing speculation in the last couple of years, somebody like Jamal Cain was a quote-unquote transfer risk, right? He had somewhat limited minutes the first two seasons. He had a short leash with Wojo, et cetera. But if you look at what he's doing to date, this is why, both as a fan base, I think we have to be patient with players, and as a player themselves, I think they need to be patient with the program, right? Like, again, taking Jamal, and this, just using him as an example, if he had decided to transfer and that was the best for him, okay, so be it. But he's continuing to choose to be here, and look at what's happening as a result, right? Like, he's getting more minutes. He and Bailey are really competing for minutes at the four. And when the season's over and next season, like, he's in a really good position to get a ton of minutes as a senior, right? So I really just kind of put this use this as an opportunity to kind of talk to the fan base as, sometimes we just got to be patient. And I know in this day and age, it's harder than ever, but we just got to be patient with the players and the coaches, because minute to minute, day to day is not how these things should be measured. We need to look at this over time, right?
Yeah. And some people like to use the term epidemic. I think that's being a little dramatic, but yes, a lot of kids do transfer, but there are opportunities to do so. And if kids see a place that works better for them other than their current situation and they can find it, good for them. Move on, find someplace where you're happier. But to your point, that fans do have to realize there are only so many minutes in a game, and not everybody can play 30.
Right.
So like, when you see a guy who was a former top 75 recruit who is playing fewer than 10 minutes in a game, I think it's a little overreact to say, oh man, he's probably going to transfer. He's probably going to get out of here. Look at him sitting on the bench. He's probably so upset. Well, sometimes these things take time. I always like to say, did all of these kids start and play 30 minutes a game in high school as a freshman? Maybe some of them did, but some of them probably played freshman ball as freshmen. And then they got to the sophomore team, as sophomores, and played on the varsity. And then they became starters as juniors and got scholarship offers. So, sometimes it takes some patience. And yeah, like you were saying, Phil, sometimes it takes time to develop. Sometimes guys have to, like a guy like Symir Torrence. Yeah, he's a top 50 prospect. And yeah, he's coming off the bench right now, but he could be a huge, huge part of the future. And he has looked good in limited minutes this year. And I think he's going to be a great point guard for Marquette. So like, you just can't count the minutes and say, oh man, we got a top 50 prospect here and he's not playing very much. This is a disaster. He's just not working out. You can't play 10 guys on the floor at once.
Right.
You can only put five guys out there. There's only so many minutes in a game.
Right. Well, and it also goes to, circling back to the true serum and the question we all want to ask Wojo, right? Like, part of the task of the coach is to balance, all these competing factors in terms of playing time and player development and personalities and all that stuff, right? Like, so at the end of the day, we could speculate all we want on the current roster in terms of who's a transfer risk, but we simply don't know. We don't have enough information on what's going on inside the program. And I feel pretty confident, having talked to generally ex-players, right? There are a couple of ex-Marquette players, but even just general ex-collegiate athletes and whatnot, and this isn't a humble brag, just, people I've known in life, every one of them has almost to a person has admitted at some point in time they thought about transferring for athletic reasons. It might have been nanoseconds, it might have been months of thought, but right, like, this is just the nature of the beast. So I don't, and I appreciate the question, and I get where it's coming from, but I think I think at the end of the day, especially for me, I think we just need to sit back and enjoy the ride, right? And see where the season's going. Is it as, you know, lights out as it could be? No, but again, it's better than average, so let's appreciate it.
Yeah. One thing, not to get too off topic, but I will say one thing I am going to keep an eye on between now and New Year's Day, it is transfer season.
That's true. Finals are over.
After finals, before conference play starts, and Marquette has a scholarship available. So if there is, I don't know who it could possibly be, but if there is some player who leaves a school and is looking to be in a new place in January and thus be eligible a year from now, Marquette might give him a call if he fits.
Yeah, I mean, we've
again,
got
I have
room
no idea who may
season,
be doing
right?
that, who may be leaving schools, but Marquette has a scholarship to play with, so they have some ammunition that other schools may not if there is a high-profile mid-semester transfer available.
Right, and so it wouldn't heat up. It wouldn't heat up until after this week, probably, because I think the last of the state schools have finals this week. So I suspect if anything's going to happen, it's going to be this week. I would also point out it's a good sign that no transfers have been reported yet for Marquette, right? So
yeah, boy, knock on wood there, buddy.
Yeah, move big, you know. But so we'll see. But anyway, I think we've stared at the karma gods long enough for that one. Taunted them, in fact. So the last question to close out the pod, and full disclosure, this comes from Rob Lowe, who is a contributor as part of Crack Sidewalks.
And I loved him on Parks and Rec, by the way.
fantastic character, and one of the leading advocates of Arby's consumption in the Marquette fan base. So, you know, it's coming from a real solid place. But anyway, Rob's question is, 2-point percentage, turnovers, or offensive rebounding? Which gets better from where it is right now? Side note, those three things are things Marquette struggles with.
Yeah, to give you a perspective, so according to KenPom, as we are recording this on Monday night, so again, there are 353 Division I teams. 2-point percentage, Marquette's at 43.3%. That ranks 317 in the country. Turnovers, so in other words, percentage of possessions that end in a turnover, Marquette's at 21.4%. That ranks 274th in the country. So they turn the ball over a lot. We know this. And offensive rebounds, the number is not as horrid as I thought, but it's still not good. 28%, so percentage of offensive rebounds, that ranks 178th in the country. So, of those numbers, which do we think will improve the most? Actually, those things have actually refreshed since I last recorded, but I'm just going to stick with those numbers for the heck of it. But yeah, those are close to what they are. Do you want to go first, Phil, or shall I take a stab at it?
I'm more than happy to take a stab at it first. I think the 2-point percentage is – I'm going to cheat a little because I think two of the three get better. I'm not saying astronomically better, but I think 2-point percentage and the offensive rebounding improve. I think as they start to balance their shooting and move, you know, not only are they not good at shooting 2-point shots, they're not taking a ton of them. I mean, it's 60% of the offense, but comparatively speaking, they're taking a lot more threes than twos from a balance perspective. So I think as they take more shots inside the arc, I think they'll start to hit more and they'll feel more comfortable inside the arc. And as a consequence, I think the offensive rebounding numbers will improve because they're not going to have those long rebounds that come with missing threes and or as many threes and stuff like that. So I think both of those might tick up a little bit. And quite frankly, I think the turnovers probably get worse as they go into Big East play. So it's give some, take some.
So I think over the next three games, hopefully they all get a little bit better. Right. You know, I'll say this, Marquette, there probably haven't been a ton of teams that have played nine games with only three bye games. Like Marquette has played, of Marquette's nine games, five have been against Power Conference opponents, plus Davidson, who is a higher mid-major, I guess you would call them. You know, the six really quality opponents. So maybe the quality of opponents has probably been keeping those numbers down a little bit. Now, not significantly. But my answer, I think, is offensive rebounds. My logic there is, I think we're getting a lot more minutes out of Jace Johnson and Jamal Kane. And I think those two combined will boost that offensive rebounding percentage number up a little more. Because I really like Chase Johnson's effort on the glass. His offensive rebounding numbers are, let me see, get those up. Yeah, like far and away the best on the team. He rebounds at 18.7%, which, you know, the next highest number on the team would be Morrow at 13.8% of percentage of offensive rebounds that he grabs. So I think Jace is going to get a lot more minutes, and so I think that'll be a lot more offensive rebounds. And I think Jamal Cain is going to continue to get more minutes, and I think he rebounds very well for a guy who's more of a perimeter player. He's at 8.3% for offensive rebounds, which is very close to Theo John's numbers, actually, at 8.9. So I think those two guys playing more will help. And I'm also pessimistic about the other two numbers moving too much. I'm kind of with you about the turnovers. Like, I don't think a team that is this careless with the ball is going to suddenly be great about taking care of the ball. Anonymous Eagle had a really good article in the past week, though, not to get too off topic, but they kind of talked about how pace is maybe a bad thing for Marquette. Maybe they're playing too fast, and that is maybe leading to some of their turnovers, so maybe Marquette slows it down a bit, is kind of what the suggestion of the article. If they slowed it down a little bit, maybe the turnovers would not be as bad. I thought it was a good article. Go back and check it out. But still, as far as a skill set, I don't think... Look, Marquette's got guys who turn the ball over, and it's not like we're adding any player, a significant number of players or who take care of the ball, or all these guys who turn the ball over so much are going to suddenly stop turning the ball over.
Right, exactly.
So
yeah,
that's the thing. You know, I was looking at the game by game. So you're at, for, like, if you're not big into these KenPom numbers, so a turnover percentage, again, the percentage of possessions that end in a turnover. So what's a good number? Well, the number one team in the country is Washington State. That's 13.5%. So Marquette is at 21.4%. So to put that in perspective, the worst in the nation is 29.7%. That's almost 30%. That's Arkansas Pine Bluff, if you're curious. So roughly what would be a good turnover percentage number? I'd say about 17% is a good number. That would put you in the top 50, roughly, in the country. So Marquette in this season has only had, looking at all of their games, there have only been two games this season where Marquette's turnover, if we're going to judge 17% as a good number as far as turnover percentage for your offense, Marquette's only had two games where the turnover percentage was better than that. Purdue, it was 15.8, and USC, it was 16.1. They have had 5 games where it was 20% or worse. 27.5% against Loyola Maryland, barf. 21.8% against Wisconsin. 29.4% against Robert Morris. So that's basically about as bad as it could be. So what did I say a minute ago? 29.7 is, yes, the worst in the country?
Yep.
So 29.4 against Robert Morris, to put that in perspective, how bad the turnovers were in that game. 22.2 against Maryland, 25.2 against Kansas State. So those are some pretty atrocious numbers for turnovers. And again, maybe it goes up a tick, but I don't see it getting significantly better. I think Marquette's just going to have to be a team that's going to have to find ways to make up for how much it turns over the ball. And 2-point percentage, maybe, again, it's just because the number is so bad right now, maybe it'll go up a little bit. To be ranked in the worst, the 300, man, that's way down there. But Marquette just does not have guys to score at the rim. They don't feed the post. Obviously, they have pretty good three-point shooters, so maybe there's not a reason to. So, and the perimeter players Marquette does have, they don't attack the basket that well and get...
Right. Get
that many easy buckets.
Sakar
does. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of his game, but Marcus Howard never has been and never really will be a guy who gets a lot of buckets at the rim. He's just not that big. That's just not a part of his game. His game is outside shooting, and that's fine. And, you know, the little step back mid-range. That's good stuff. But as far as getting, you know, a lot of buckets in the paint, it's just not his game. It's really not the game for really any of Marquette's perimeter players, and they're not going to feed the post. So I don't see the 2-point percentage getting significantly better for the rest of the year. So just kind of by process of elimination, that's kind of when I go with offensive rebounding percentage as the number that I think will improve the most over the next, you know, 20 games or so.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting, you bring up a really good point. The couple of things that stick out to me in terms of individual players is most of our primary scorers are actually inverted when it comes to two-point percentage versus three-point percentage, right? Like, and what I mean by that is Marcus Howard's two-point percentage is – is almost a full point less than his 3-point percentage, right? He's making 3-point shots at about 45%. He's making 2-point shots at 39%, right? Ordinarily, you would think those would be reversed in, you know.
Right, yeah. Closer shots, you should shoot for a higher percentage.
Correct.
Right.
Kobe McEwen is really inverted, right? He's making it 38.5 from behind the arc, but he's only making a quarter of his 2-point shots.
And so that tells you he's either a mess around the rim or he's just really bad at the mid-range.
Correct.
And I think from short-term memory, I think he does miss a lot of shots at the rim.
Correct. And then Greg Elliott is inverted as well, right? Like, relatively smaller sample size, but he's hitting threes at a 50% clip, which you want. I'd love to see that sustained.
Shoot twice as much, Greg, if you're going to shoot that percentage.
Right, exactly. Like, eliminate your two-point shots altogether. But he's shooting 35% from two. And he's got that little kind of, you know, jumper that he tries to hit similar to Kane. So the only two scorers that are ball handlers, drivers that are going to shoot the outside shot that aren't inverted are Sakar and Jamal. And Jamal's the only one that's hitting twos at greater than 50% that's not a post player. So, you know, one, I think we need more minutes for Jamal. Two, that's the problem, right? Like, our primary ball handlers are not scoring in the paint.
Yeah, so based on two-point percentage and rebounding numbers, there's a lot of data to suggest Jamal Cain should be playing more.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not saying he's going to fix everything, but I think we need to get him some more minutes.
Yes, but yeah, exactly. He's not going to turn this team from a bubble-ish team to a top tier team necessarily, but there is enough data to suggest that he is earning more minutes, and I hope he does get more
correct
minutes.
And the other thing that circling back to the timeouts, the other thing that stands out to me, again, looking at our primary ball handlers, from a turnover rate perspective, you know, we kind of bag on, you know, Marcus is not a great ball handler and turnover prone. As a turnover rate standpoint, he is our best ball handler.
Right.
You know, Sakar, Kobe, Greg, and God help us, Ed is at 38% for a turnover rate, meaning at essentially just over a third of every time he touches the ball, he turns it over.
And that has to be a lot of travels.
Right.
Because, I mean, gosh, we made the joke in the last podcast, and I feel like I'm picking on the guy, but when you seemingly travel about a third of the time you get the ball, that's why you're going to get a number like that.
Right. So, but you know, so Sakar, Kobe, Greg, Jamal is fine. So, and Samir, right, small sample size, they're all in the neighborhood of 25% turnover rate, which means...
Right, way too high.
Way too high.
Yeah, I don't know if you said it, but yeah, Marcus is at 17.5. So all those guys around 25%. Yeah, that gap is much bigger than you would assume.
Right. So it almost, you know, again, it's contrary to everything we've said leading into this season, but right now the numbers tell me Jamal should be getting more minutes and Marcus should be handling the point. You know, cause everybody else that's kind of handling the point is turnover prone. So maybe they get that fixed. Maybe that's what they spend the 10 days on, but it's definitely a critical need if this team's going to continue to try and achieve its ceiling.
Yeah, to be clear, Marcus should be handling the ball from a turnover perspective, but as far as scoring, I think he's doing pretty well off the ball.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I agree.
I definitely see what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would prefer for him to be off the ball because I think he's better scoring that way. But from a turnover perspective, I just...
Yeah, maybe he should be handling it more.
He needs the ball in his hands more, which is a weird thing to say because he tends to dominate the ball in games. But, yeah, so it's something to keep an eye on. It's a great question, right? And, you know, there's some that will say it won't get any better and we're doomed to a season of low two-point percentage, high turnovers, and low offensive rebounding. But we'll see. That's why they play the games, right?
Yeah, eat at Arby's. But no, yeah, my answer to the question, just by process of elimination, I think offensive rebounding has the much room for growth based on potential minutes that could be shifting going forward. So my final answer to Rob's question, which was a great one, I think may generate even more discussion on Twitter, as I think a lot of people who saw that question say, oh, that's a pretty interesting one. But yeah, I think driven largely by Kane and Johnson, I think those two could really improve the offensive rebounding numbers, and the other two, I'm not sure how much they move.
Yep, I agree. I think that'll be, like I said, I think 2-point percentage will go up, but I certainly agree offensive rebounding will.
Yeah, I hope 2-point percentage doesn't get much worse, because 317 in the country is woof. And again, given the next three opponents, that number could take a nice jump, but we may get hit with reality once Marquette gets back to Big East play. But who knows, pad those stats a little bit, make it look a little prettier for the KenPom numbers as we hit January.
Right.
All right, is that all for the questions?
Yeah, I think we accomplished it all. I mean, there's other questions out there, but boy, it feels like we've accomplished enough.
Yeah, I think that's plenty. Maybe we may answer a few more on Twitter just for fun. But yeah, we appreciate all your guys' questions, and we appreciate you guys following the podcast. It's been a good discussion, a nice way to fill the bye week and get back into it again. So games on Tuesday and Friday this week. Hopefully we will get another podcast to you before Christmas, and then we'll see what happens over the holidays. But we always welcome your feedback. If you have any more questions, maybe we will hit a few more. I'm on Twitter at JoeMcCann3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave comments there. You can also leave comments on Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. That is always much appreciated. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Post a podcast there as well. Anything else before we get out of here, Phil?
Nope. Let's not lose any games this week and survive in advance.
All right. And if we don't talk to you for a few weeks, happy holidays, everybody. But hopefully we will before then. Until then, though, seashells and balloons.